Okay, Katie Barlow. Katie Barlow, one of the newest journalists to Fox 5, and I mean a lawyer, and you give us all the Supreme Court, all the political rundown. So how are you liking being on TV?
I am learning as I go. There's a lot of things I don't know since this wasn't my bread and butter before a couple years ago. I majored in broadcast journalism in college, but hadn't done the TV thing in a very long time. So it is fun, but there's still a lot more for me to learn. And the team has been really helpful. They, you know, I'm out with the photographers and they're like, they're very nice about it. They're like, you might want to do it this way or suggesting this. And I'm like, I will take whatever advice you have. Mold me as you please.
That's so funny. All the cameramen and women are so good. They're such pros, like at Fox 5. So that's so funny. I feel like they would do the same thing with me too. They'd be like, not sure you want to stand there next to the trash can. Like,
yeah, exactly.
I'm like, I got to get this out. So Katie, our audience, I mean, people want to know more about you. Let's start from the beginning. Where did you grow up? Did you always know you wanted to be an attorney? And much like so many of us at Fox 5, you seem like a goal setter and like, man, do you get them. So
type A. Are we just like a studio full of type A's? So I grew up in Georgia. I'm born and raised there. And I went to college there. So I went to school all the way through undergrad until I moved up to DC for law school. Both my parents were public school teachers. And so I was very, had a great time going to school and knowing the teachers growing up. At a pretty early age, I knew I wanted to be a lawyer. And at a pretty early age, I knew I wanted to do journalism and law somehow. As my kindergarten teacher and my mother will tell you, I started arguing very young. So perhaps that's what put the bug in my brain about being a lawyer. But from high school and really earlier, I put myself on this type A path of wanting to go to law school, practice for a while, and then want to go into journalism to do legal journalism. And I saw it as kind of in many ways, and we all have our personal run-ins with the law in different ways, and it interacts with our lives in different ways. And I saw the law is so inaccessible to so many people, whether it's, you know, navigating family court, as a lot of people do, or, you know, personal experiences with tickets or, you know, businesses and trying to put those up and keep those surviving. The law is so inaccessible. It's so expensive that I wanted to go to law school to learn it and learn how to speak that language fluently. And then I wanted to practice for a while to get fluent in after learning the language. And then I kind of see journalism as opening that barrier and translating what is often unnecessarily inaccessible to people. Now, that wasn't my goal at 15. At 15, I thought, that sounds like a fun thing to do. But as I have done it more and more and had just really amazing teachers and mentors, the path has worked its way out. But it wasn't always a given, especially since I left my law firm job in February of 2020, which was great timing for me.
Yeah. When you were growing up, was there one incident where you saw somebody deal with family court or to your point, was it just like a culmination of things that you really said, oh my God, this is, you know, really inaccessible? And because the reality is, like you said, it's if you've ever had any court interaction, it's super expensive. I mean, if you have endless money, eventually you'll win, you know, it seems like, not always, but it seems like. And then it's so intricate. It's so complicated. Different arguments, things that you think are black and white can be so gray. But was there one specific thing that happened to someone and you were like, wow, that just doesn't seem right?
Not really. It was really just kind of an understanding over multiple experiences over time. There wasn't like a moment that stood out. And half of it, if I'm being quite honest, was me just being a super nerd as a kid and being interested in it and liking it and, you know, going on field trips and learning about it and all of the above. So it kind of, I can blame myself half for that.
Now, do you have siblings?
I have no siblings. I am an only child, in case it's not written like right there across my forehead. I'm an only child.
Wow, just one. Okay, wow. Yeah. So your parents, did your parents like hyper-focus on you or you were just self-driven?
No, I was pretty self-driven. I'm sure I was more annoying to my parents than anything. I don't know where that came from. If you ask them, they have no idea. And I'm actually the opposite of my husband, who is the youngest of 10. So he and I are just like complete and total opposite family experiences. And our communication skills vary based on those experiences. But my parents I'm very close to. In fact, as we speak, they're driving up from Georgia right now. Again, only child, so they will drive up to come see us. But my family, as small as we are very close and spend a lot of time together. And if I'm not down in Georgia, they come up a good bit. So I'm very lucky in that respect.
Oh, I love. Yeah, me too. I'm super close with my family and I love that. Yeah. Okay, so you were obviously very, when you were growing up, you know, you're very focused on your studies. You knew very young what you wanted to do. But did you have any other hobbies? I mean, were you like queen of the debate team? I mean, I could also see you being like queen of debate.
Yeah. No, I didn't do debate. I was a huge theater nerd and still am very much, which I think a lot of us tend to be. There's a theater to lawyer law school pipeline.
Uh-huh.
And there's a journalist to law school pipeline. And then it goes the other way. So I thoroughly enjoyed theater. I briefly entertained going to college for theater and trying to make a run of it, but did not do that. I still, my favorite weekends are going up to New York and taking in a matinee, an evening show, just packing in as much as possible.
Okay, when you were in theater, what was like your best role? Like what Tennessee Williams play did you star in?
Oh my God, you're so right. Like it's so absolutely right. All my sons, Arthur Miller, I was the mother. That was my favorite. I mean, we did like, you know, one act play competitions and high school, and I won, you know, best actress in the state of Georgia and all of the above. So I was super, super into it.
Wow.
And still love consuming it. Like theater is my favorite, you know, thing to watch. Can't sing at all, but enjoy watching others do it.
Oh my God. Do you feel like your next act will be like cameos in Law and Order? Like, do you think you'll just...
You know what's so funny?
Have they called you yet?
Oh, it was one of the lawyers. I think it was somebody on the Judiciary Committee this week during the, I've been covering the confirmation hearing for Judge Ketanji Brown Jackson all week in the Senate. And one of the senators on the Judiciary Committee said, I'm not a lawyer, but I watch a lot of Law and Order. I was like, if a lawyer had a dime for every time they heard that. But anyway, no, I love theater. I briefly entertained politics for a moment. I was student body president at my undergrad at the University of Georgia. I love running. My family, my dad and I run together a lot. My other great affection that I learned later in life was travel, particularly solo travel. I had to travel for work a lot around the world. My early career had me living in the middle of Dubai and working in the middle of the desert at a document facility for long stints of time. But I also had to travel to a lot of other countries for my practice. And I would try and tack on trips at the beginning or end. And because you're traveling with work people, it's not like you can, you know, get your friends to come out and meet you. So I learned to travel the world by myself a lot. And I just have deep affection for that. And I think that's something that will always be a hobby or an interest or something that I enjoy.
And what do you tell your husband? Hey, bye. I'm going by myself for a week. See ya.
Sometimes. never for a week nowadays because Fox 5, I haven't been able to escape since our honeymoon, actually. But yeah, I mean, you know, if a ticket opens up and like I almost booked going to see the Northern Lights a couple weekends ago, but then it didn't work out for a Friday afternoon. But I really, I just feel lucky to be able to do it and able to do it. That as a woman growing up in Georgia, that wasn't a part of my future that I saw. Being able to access the world, being able to access the world alone, being able to access the world alone as a woman. And so I feel like if I get a moment to go do it, I try to.
What have you learned about yourself traveling solo? Because, you know, there's this whole thing, like no matter where you go in America, right? Our parents are, oh my God, as a woman traveling alone in other countries, yeah. It's very scary. You shouldn't do it, you know? And I mean,
yeah. My mom would back you up on that. My mom would back you up. I did a couple weeks in Thailand by myself. And I think I booked like a jungle hike by myself with, you know, a local, and we got like deep into the jungle on one of these hikes, and he wants to show me a macadamia nut, and he whips out a machete to like open up the macadamia nut. And I'm like, oh, well, this wasn't the smartest move to get myself in the middle of, but it was absolutely fine. And but I was perfectly safe.
There's
always
that moment, right?
My mother probably wouldn't have been thrilled with that one, where it just occurred to me, like, you know, if something happens to me, here I am. Like, there's not much I can do about it.
They'll never know. I know.
It was perfectly fine. But I learned confidence. And there's just something to being able to navigate the world, figure out new transportation systems, sit by yourself at dinner, just all of the above by yourself. You learn to depend on yourself a little bit more. And you learn confidence. I also learned to bring it back home with me. So never before I started doing that would I go to dinner by myself. And now, you know, if, you know, my husband has a work event or something like that, or it's just been a really long day, I'll go, you know, sit with a book somewhere and, you know, right across the street from where we live and thoroughly enjoy it. So I try to do that too.
Isn't that so great? Everybody should do that. I love that. If you don't travel by yourself, go to dinner by yourself, go to a movie alone. You know,
exactly.
You learn a lot, and it sometimes forces you to go and talk to people or interact, you know, out of your comfort zone.
Navigate. Yeah, exactly.
So you learned confidence. I mean, I'm curious because you do seem like a person that, you know, goal setter, and we'll talk about that. But what do you think, like, your greatest strength is your greatest weakness?
Ooh, greatest strength, greatest weakness. Greatest strength is probably what you just said, where I usually can set a goal and then I do everything in my power to make that happen. And this far in life, I've been lucky enough that happens, despite some challenges and setbacks. The weakness that's embedded in that is I can be, quite critical of myself and my journey. And, as you and I were talking before we started recording, as I gave you that advice, but it's also self-advice to give myself grace. I'm really good at giving others grace and encouraging others to give themselves grace. Not great at it myself, but I'm working on it.
Yeah.
It's all part of the type A perfectionistic bundle that a lot of us have. But I'm aware of it. So self-awareness is step one, right?
Yeah. And I don't know about you, but I try to do things that get like, you know, yoga, or I just try to like, I mean, meditation is so hard. Cause like just it's so hard trying to sit.
It's a lifelong journey. I try.
Do you, what do you do? Do you meditate, or is it reading a book that takes you out? But even when I try to be quiet for 5 minutes, I mean, within 2 minutes, I'm already thinking of everything I should be doing.
Yeah. When I get into a good meditation practice, I can do it regularly, but I have to, it takes me a week or two to get back in the groove. Yeah. Running for me gives me that stillness and that just deep calm, which in DC, you can run 24/7, but right now is actually the perfect time. So I've gotten back into that more lately. But it's a work in progress, you know. Yeah. I'm still figuring out what works, and being quiet and being still is going to be a lifelong journey of mine for sure. As all of us who are journalists, who are talkers.
Yeah, it's so hard. Okay, you went to Georgetown Law. That's a big deal.
I did.
Big deal.
Oh, so fun.
Was it really hard? Oh my God. I mean, I that would be my nightmare, is waking up in a classroom at Georgetown Law. It would be like, oh, okay. Oh God.
That were hard. Yeah. But it was, I had wanted to be there at when my mom married my stepdad, who is my dad, and who I call my dad, when I was nine. They took us on a trip to Washington, D.C. as like the family moon. They didn't take a honeymoon. It was our family moon.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, we were two public school teachers. Like, they could afford to take us to D.C. And that's what we did. And they knew that I had an interest in going there. So I was nine. And we stayed one block over from Georgetown Law School at the Holiday Inn, or the whatever that is right there, which one day was actually where I ended up interviewing for my law firm job. But I think that's when I got in my head, I want to be here, when I was nine. The goal was to get to DC, to get to law school. And Georgetown had just been a goal of mine for so long. I even, you know, considered going out of state for undergrad, but wanted to stay in state because Georgia has an amazing program that'll pay for undergrad if you have good grades, basically. You can go to a public school at Georgia. So when I got into Georgetown, I just was so happy to be there that I, you know, all the rest was just secondary. I was just an absolute nerd about it. And I would go back and do 1L again right now. It's just, I felt like I had finally made it to the city that I was trying to make it to for a very long time.
Oh my God, I love that.
Super nerd.
Yeah. But wait, I want to go back. Your parents obviously separated when you were young. Your mom went on to remarry. It sounds like you're very close with your stepfather.
Yeah.
Is your father your biological dad? Are you still close with him? Do you talk to him?
No, he's not really in the picture at all. My stepdad is maybe the greatest man that I have ever met in my entire life. And he is just an absolute gem of a human and has been there for me, you know, through high school boyfriend breakups. And he took me on my first long race. I did my first half marathon with him. I told him I was thinking about doing it. He got our family into running. And he did that with me when I was in college. And, you know, he and my mom worked very hard to be able to help me get to law school and through it. And he's the one that's driving the truck. My mother never drives. He drives her everywhere all the time. I've also never seen two people more in love. And he's just, I absolutely adore him, and nobody could ever, replace him.
Wow. Your mom lucked out. I mean, that's hard to do, to find a man.
She's got game. I'll say that. She's got game.
She must have. I mean, they must have started dating when you were young. So she was a single.
They started dating, I guess, when I was like 7 or 8. But so they were also both teachers, and I had him. I never had my mom because that would have been explosive. We would have just argued. But I had him for 7th grade algebra, which was fun. But then I had him he moved up to high school, and he was one of the coaches in high school. And I had him for health in high school, which was, you know, not every high schooler's dream.
So your stepdad is giving health education, which involves, I'm sure, some like sex breakdown, which is always like awkward no matter who the teacher is. But then it's your stepdad.
Well, I got to miss those days. He gave me, I was a senior and taking it with all freshmen. He gave me independent study. So I basically like made all of the presentations for class. So I didn't go.
Oh my God. What'd you learn from your mom as a single mom? I mean, she must have been so strong to look. I was telling you before we started, I have an 11-month old son. Without my husband, I don't know how women do it.
I don't know how any parent does it on their own. My mom her 60th birthday is coming up. That's why they're coming up this weekend. It's this weekend. Oh. She is formidable. She's incredibly strong, whip smart, and her instinct I envy, because she can just she just knows things before they happen. She whatever energetic plane she's on, she just has great empathy and instinct. And yes, she carried us through a very rough time for both of us at a young age, and brought us out of it. And then found Bill, is his name, is and I just, you know, she changed both of our lives.
Wow, that's like, I mean, look. She just deserves an honor for that, because it is so hard to do.
Without doubt.
You know, it sounds like, I mean, you know, as a school teacher, we all know teachers they don't make a lot of money. So I can imagine the two of you probably had some struggles. I mean, financially.
We did. We were very lucky that my grandfather had a business. He was had a car dealership in Athens. And my grandfather is also the reason why I was able to go to law school. And, you know, we were never too far from help if we needed it. But she certainly, you know, made a lot of magic happen.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Well, you have a strong woman in your life is a huge thing.
I do.
So
I'm very lucky.
You graduate from law school. What kind of attorney are you still? And then how long did you practice law?
So I practiced for 6 or 7 years. And I was a litigator, but that means a lot of different things.
Okay.
And really my practice at my law firm ended up being some litigation, but also what's called white collar investigations. And that's usually when big global, in my case, when big global corporations, allegedly do bad things. And so you need to go collect a lot of paperwork and emails and information. It's basically what journalists do. You're going to like read their emails and investigate what, if anything, they've done, put together a package. And then, you know, you coordinate with the government and you say, look, this is what we did. And they say, look, that's really bad. You should pay us a lot of money. And we say, we'll pay you some money, but not all of that money. You know, you're representing these global corporations with the government, whether it's the Southern District of New York or the SEC or the FTC or whoever it is. And, you know, saying this is what was done. I also did some litigation, both pro bono, you know, here in Washington, D.C., like in family court. I was the case that had me in Dubai was the 9/11 litigation. So I, you know, I had my hand in a lot of different things, but that was the type of law I practiced for 6 years with my firm. And I was very lucky, to work with them. They were the main hub was in London. That's why a lot of our clients were abroad. But I also told them before I joined them, I said, I will leave you one day for journalism. I'm not in this for the long haul. And they knew that from the beginning. And toward the end of my time with them, I had started doing a lot of other things like appearing on MSNBC and writing and, you know, just I had a podcast and I was interviewing folks like Stacey Abrams and others. And so I, you know, I did all these things while working at a law firm, and not many law firms would allow an associate to do that. Yeah. And I just was very lucky that they were supportive of that and that they knew I was going to leave them, you know, at some point.
So would companies come to you because they had been being investigated by the government? They knew they had done something wrong, and they basically would come to your law firm and say, okay, well, try to get us the best deal that we can do, right? Okay.
That's basically it. Yeah. That's white collar in a nutshell.
I mean, of course, like Bernie Madoff comes to mind, you know? I don't know if that's really like white collar. I mean, it seems like it was worse than that.
It is.
But it's white collar, no, right?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. Did you get to do Bernie Madoff, or they didn't come to you? Oh, bummer.
That was not. I don't know if our law firm might have had some hand in it. Also, when those huge investigations happen, all these individuals that work at the company start to need representation, and those get spun out to law firms, you know, across the country and the world too. So there's lots of pieces of the pie when there's one investigation.
Do you have a one case that stands out to you that was either the most interesting to work on or you're most proud of, or, you know, I'm sure it's an array.
Yeah. I think the 9/11 litigation was the most interesting for me. We represented the oldest Islamic financial institution in the world in Dubai. And all of this is public, so I can talk about it. But we, you know, were investigating, you know, if there were any ties to 9/11. There were allegations that there were, that they, you know, had accounts for certain people. And
when you you're saying like they were funding the terrorists, right? There were alleged,
not necessarily funding, or I mean, there were certainly allegations that they were, or that they, you know, you gave them the loan to. There were allegations that you gave them a loan to have a car, or you know, you had a checking account for them to get paid by whoever.
Gotcha.
You know, lots of different pieces to it, and so our job was to, you know, go out into this document facility in the middle of the desert and literally go through these like financial records from the 80s and 90s, you know, that you had to pull from a file in the back, you know, and see if, you know, there were, you know, signatures from members of Al-Qaeda. And I, you know, to tackle a document management system that's that old. But I just spent hours and hours and hours and hours and hours and hours doing that. And it was, you know, fascinating. It's again, like being a journalist, you're looking for pieces of information, and you're reading emails, and you're doing interviews, and you're putting a story together of what happened. And it needs to be truthful, because it is, of course, what you're representing to the government. It's the exact same skill set.
Yeah, it really is. You were well prepared. Now, what's your deal? Okay, now, after all these years of being an attorney, you think the government has too much power to come into our lives or not? There's a big open-ended question.
Yeah, right. Sometimes yes, sometimes no.
They can do anything they want, which sometimes, right, to your point, is a good thing.
Yeah, sometimes. So, like, look, this is, to get really nerdy on you, this is the social contract. This is, we decide to collect ourselves as a people because we want protection to some extent. Otherwise, in the state of nature, there is no guaranteed protection. So we have agreed to some extent to allow the government into our lives for police protection, for, and police is a hot button word. I don't mean in the sense of a police officer. I mean state protection. We organize ourselves as a state from the state of nature to have protection. But then once you start to give anything power, there's always overreach, which is what the founders cared deeply about. They were deeply afraid of an overreach of power. And our government has without doubt overreached in many instances, both from a police protection standpoint, but also from regulating our rights. And that's also why we have a free press, right? I mean, we have a free press in this country because they're the guard, at least theoretically, of that government overreach. So I feel like that's also a deeply important role to play. And I think a lot of the journalists at Fox 5 do such a good job at that.
Amazing. That really newsroom, and I think in local news in general, people don't give local journalists enough credit.
Without
I mean,
doubt.
They do. Yeah. They really do it in such a non-biased way. I think these national news outlets really overshadow all the great journalism that happens on a local level, newspaper level. You know, you just hear about the big name networks. Okay, I want to talk about you and your husband. How long have you been married?
We have been married just since August. So we got engaged in 2019. Right before the pandemic in December of 2019.
Yes.
And so we were, you know, one of those pandemic engagements that we were like, are we, will we, won't we? Like, what are we going to do? And I had no interest whatsoever in actually planning a wedding. I felt like that was a burden to figure out that usually falls on the bride, although my husband is a team player and was happy to do a lot of the planning. So we put it off until August of last year. And we got married in our living room, which is what I wanted very much. My parents got married in the living room of a friend. And so I think that and they have an incredible marriage. And so I think that, you know, living room weddings are a good start. So we got married in our living room in August. We had originally invited over 100 people, and then Delta happened. And so we uninvited everyone except for our immediate family, which turned out to be perfect. We had, you know, 15 people. And our closest family, including my husband's children, who are three really sweet, really smart, wonderful kids. And we did it in the living room.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. And your husband's an attorney too.
He is. Yeah.
What?
We have lots of lawyer talk. I grew up with teacher talk in my house, and we have lawyer talk in my new house.
I know I was going to say, my God, is it always a debate, you know, between the two? I'm sure
sometimes,
it's not, but
sometimes it is. There's often we will debate things. But what I love about him also is that he just has such a different perspective than me on a lot of different things and a lot of different experience than I do on a lot of different things. So I love hearing him talk about the incredible work that he has done in his life. He was a prosecutor in the Southern District, and at one point was chief of terrorism in the Southern District. And he just has led an incredible professional life that I enjoy hearing about. But yes, plenty of debate.
I bet. Oh, my Lord, two lawyers.
And plenty of nerding out over the law. So, you know, it's exactly what I was looking for.
You found your match.
I did.
Well, you're one of the newest members to our Fox 5 family. And, you know, I love that you're a goal setter and a goal getter. What do you want to do now as a journalist, as being an on-air TV personality, as well, of course, as a lawyer and a wife and a mommy and all these things? But now what's your goal with TV?
This is it. So I felt no shop in town would give me a second look because I didn't have a reel coming out of my law firm. And, you know, I emailed all of them and said, you know, can I do some legal analysis, whatever it is. And Paul and Kyle, to their credit, said, you know, why don't you just start doing some talk backs for us on the law? And that turned into a freelance position. And now being the chief legal correspondent, and I don't know if Paul and Kyle will, I don't know if they want this to be public or not yet, but I'm going to have a show covering the law that's going to launch soon. That's up to them if you can cut this part out or not.
Okay.
But that's exactly what I want to do, is explain what's happening in the law. And gosh, we've seen so much of it in Virginia and Maryland and DC just since I started last June, you know, covering the mask mandates and covering COVID response and covering some of the crimes and covering like restaurants reopening and cover. I mean, there's just been so much all the school board stuff. There's been so much news, and being able to explain it is what I love to do. It's also what I do with SCOTUS Blog and explaining, you know, the Supreme Court.
Katie Barlow, absolutely amazing. You guys can follow Katie Barlow at Katie Lee Barlow on Twitter and at SCOTUS Blog on TikTok. Thanks, Katie.